Accession number 28804, real one.
So now I need your form, don't I?
Which one's that?
Right, what we did earlier.
Ah, right, yes, I can give you a copy of that, if you want to refer to that. Or what we can do is I can ask you the question, sort of a leading question, like the barristers do,
right.
And let you talk. I'll show you what I've got
written
down
here. Do you want me to, because I want this surely should come in fairly early on, wouldn't it?
Yes, in fact, I've referred to that all the way through when I did my questions. That's where I took it from. So, do you want to recite Bob or Black Sheep or something like that?
No, I'll just say, all right, are you ready now? Switch it on.
That's it, and this is a recording of Barbara Hammond, and this is Reel One. Now, if we start first of all just with some very general background about your life before you enlisted, even before war broke out. When were you born, for example?
I was born on the 8th of January in 1919. That was in St. Leonard's-on-Sea in Sussex. And I was the fourth child. No, that is wrong. I was the fifth child because I already had three sisters, and also a brother that was stillborn when he was born. So I lived in Sussex until war broke out. And that, of course, was in September 1929.
And do you remember any of the lead up to war breaking out? Do you remember being worried beforehand or any anticipation that something was going to happen?
Oh yes, very much so. Because at that time I had a I thought I was very much in love with an Oxford undergraduate, and he already had gone off to Munich. I think it was for a ski holiday. That, of course, was in early 1939. And everybody, I think, was probably very overjoyed when Neville Chamberlain returned from Munich to say that we were not going to have a war. So there was a great feeling of relief. And I then was only, 20 years old, and I was absolutely delighted. But with hindsight, I realise, of course, that it was the worst decision that Neville Chamberlain ever made.
And so how did you actually hear about war breaking out?
Well, just for about 2 years, I left school when I was 17, and I thought I wanted to be a nurse. And I had a sort of preliminary nursing, I suppose, 2 or 3 months. And then it wasn't for me. And so I went into the bank for 2 years, but I didn't want to stay there because it really wasn't my sort of life. And so directly war broke out in September 1939, I decided that was it, absolutely it. And a great friend of mine, who was already an auxiliary with the FANI ATS as a territorial, she said, why don't you try and enlist with the FANIs? And I said, that sounds a very good idea. So, in the middle of September, I had discharged myself from the bank, and I went up to King's College in London, and there I was enlisted for the FANIs. And I remained at home doing work with the ARP until January 1940, when I was called up. And that was on the 10th of January 1940.
Now, if I just ask you about sort of the boring mechanical aspect of actually going and enlisting. You went to King's College on the Strand. Was that?
That's quite right. It was on the Strand.
Did you have to queue or anything?
No. I went with this friend and we went straight up and we had an interview straight away. And it wasn't boring. I had a jolly good day in London. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Although, you know, people were a bit worried about the blackout, the blackout and other things that they thought might happen at any time, such as a sudden bombing raid. But no, it didn't happen, and I enjoyed the day, and I was very much agog to get going with my career in the army.
And did they make you do a medical or anything at that stage?
Yes, I had to have a medical, but that I passed that.
Mm-hmm. And that was also at King's College on the same day?
I cannot remember that. Whether I did it then, I think I probably did, or whether my doctor had to do it for me and send up a pro forma. But I don't honestly remember.
And do you remember, did they measure you for a uniform, or did you have to provide your own uniform?
Oh, no. It was when I knew I was going to be enlisted possibly within the next 2 to 3 months. And so my father already had a very good tailor, and he suggested that as I was going into the Fannies and had to have my own uniform made, that I would go to his tailor, and it was all ready for me to wear when I was called up.
So you didn't have any of the horrors that some people have described about things that didn't fit properly or
no,
things that were uncomfortable?
No, I didn't. And I was very proud of my uniform. So,
but you were in the ARP first while you were waiting for call-up?
Yes, directly I left the bank. I had been with the bank before, with the ARP before that. I'd been with them, I think, about 2 months because we all thought something might happen. So I joined up with the ARP, and also this friend who was already a territorial with the Fannies. And I went there nearly every night, I think. And in the day, I used to drive a laundry van. I don't know what I was doing. I think I was trying to transport people, probably to hospital. I only know that it was a pretty rickety old laundry van, and my mother thought it was terrible that I was dashing around with this terrible old thing and kept sort of collecting people's dirty washing, which is what she thought I was doing. But never mind, it didn't matter. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I used to go about a mile from where I lived, and it was in an ambulance station, and there was the ambulance drivers there, and there were other people on the ARP, and we used to play darts, and we used to drink beer, and we used to wait for the clarion call, which never came. We never, I think, had one situation that we had to attend to for the whole 3.5 months I was with the ARP.
And whereabouts were you? Was that Hove?
Yes, it was very near the dog stadium in Hove, at the end of Hove, on the way to Port Slade. And it was really rather fun. You were there all night, so you had to sort of do quite a lot of sleeping in the day. But I wouldn't have cared to do it for very long because it did get a bit boring. And I wasn't all that good at darts anyway.
Did they give you any special training, though, while you were there?
Oh, yes, we had some we had first aid lectures, and we knew a lot about any fatalities that should happen, like bombing or perhaps some terrible incidents in the local community. We were very much aware of that, and we were given training for that sort of eventuality.
But as you say, you were then called up in the January of 1940?
Yes, it was on Sunday.
And the first place...
Sorry. Can you get that?
There we go.
Yes, I was called up just before Christmas 1939 for January the 10th, 1940.
And the first place you had to go to was Shorncliffe Heights, is that right?
Yes, I remember waiting at Brighton Station. It was a very dismal, wet and very, very snowy day. And I felt so bereft and so desolate. And leaving my mother was ill at the time, and I was there alone. And I remember boarding a train to London, and then I had to transfer to another train, which took me to Dover, and where I was met, and then transported to Shorncliffe Heights. And there I started my time with the Fanny ATS.
Well, you were just called a Fannies at that stage, yes. Is that right? So it was before the ATS connection.
You see, I'm not doing this very well.
It's lovely, it's coming out very well. Whoever's listening to this, don't worry, it's coming out nicely.
Have you stopped it? You haven't heard,
I'll say something. So, as we were saying, it was Shorncliffe Heights, and can I just double check, that's Dover?
That's near Dover, yes. All right. And it was bitterly cold, it was absolutely full of snow and ice, and my billets, which were outside Dover, it was very palatial, and it was of Italian architecture, and it was very beautiful. I remember all the in the garden, in the bathrooms, the flats, the taps were of gold. They probably weren't, but they were probably brass, but it was very, very grand, and we were billeted there, just part of the 20th Motor Transport Company.
So this is much grander than most explanations I have of the first billet that people go to. It's not dormitories at all.
Oh, no. Sometimes there were three or four of us in a room, yes, and some weren't. But it was very palatial, and there were, I suppose, about 30 of us there altogether, and we were part of the 20th MT company, and we were doing specifically only driving staff cars and WD ambulances.
Mm-hmm. And you did tell me an anecdote about, was it your first day with the ambulance?
Yes. I will tell you about it. It was my first venture in living away from home. No, I've done all that. Can you pass all that?
That's all right, yeah.
On the first morning, I was ordered to drive some lads from the local army barracks to see the army medical officer at his sick bay in the nearby vicinity. The vehicle involved was large and needed more water in its radiator before I could proceed. The front bumper started at my knee level, and the opening into the bonnet much, much higher, and myself barely 5'4" tall. So trying to pour the contents of a very large can full of water was an exercise I hoped I would not have to repeat very often. I completely lost my way to the sick bay, and I think my chaps must have got there just before lunch. They certainly weren't back in their barracks till just before their tea, and not all that pleased. By then I was exhausted and longing to go home, but that wasn't to be. My ambulance broke down outside the entrance to Dover railway station. I sat disconsolately on the running board and waited for help. Soon two immaculately dressed gentlemen, complete with bowler hats and briefcases, emerged from the entrance and got me going. Owing to my ill health, I was given a posting back to Sussex within a week. Did I say mother's?
It was your mother that was ill, wasn't it?
Yes. Did I say owing to my mother's ill health?
She had a heart condition, is that right?
Yes, she did, yes. Mm. Was that just coincidence?
So that was very lucky. You were posted to, is it South Heighton? Heighton or Heighton? I'm not quite sure how to say it, but New Haven anyway, wasn't it?
My new home was in South Heighton, above the port of New Haven in Sussex. It was a modern building owned by the Guinness Trust, their holiday home.
So again, you weren't put in barracks or anything dreadful like that?
No, there were only about 30 of us there again, with a CEO and her deputy, and a sergeant major, and I think a sergeant, all Fannies, of course, Fannies. We weren't with the ATS then.
Mm-hmm. So you're in these lovely palatial surroundings.
Well, they weren't really palatial. They were quite big, but they were modern. And you can imagine, modern holiday homes weren't sort of palatial, really. No, they were quite big, and they were very adequate, and we were all very happy there.
And then did you have to do things like kit inspections and...
Oh, yes, because the our company sergeant major, she said she was in the war. And I think she even had some very, very rare medals.
That's from the Great War?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we were all terrified of her. And she was an absolute disciplinarian. But the sad thing was that later on in the war, the whole of her being was a hoax. And so she was discharged. And I have a feeling that she did have some imprisonment.
But as far as you were concerned, she was being strict and sort of getting you into line and getting you ready.
She was terrible. But so sad, because when I saw her later on, and I myself by that time had become a company sergeant major, there was something pathetic about her.
Mm. Did you find there was any bullying at that stage? Was it that sort of discipline?
None. Oh, no. Mm. Because all the people that I've worked with had come from very, very privileged homes, nearly all of them, very privileged and very moneyed homes. And I don't say that I was, but the majority were. And we all were great friends, and we all did everything together. And we all shared, although we did ostensibly the driving, I also did a lot of the clerical work right away. I don't know why, but I did. And also, we all had to take turns in doing one day a week the cooking or the housework. So we all just mucked in, and we had a wonderful, wonderful life together. And there was a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, and nothing nasty about any of them.
So there were no issues about a lack of privacy or having to live so close to other people?
No, not at all.
And did you have time for recreation? Did you have any free time?
Oh, yes. And I had a friend, a much older friend, and he had a little, very small little sports car. And so she used to let me have that to drive myself over to my mother in Hove, where she was living. And then, of course, I used to go away sometimes, and we had great fun as a unit, because we were very near to the billets of the DCLI, the Devon and Cornwall Light Infantry, and their officers' mess was next to us. And so they had a huge band, and we had the band in our holiday home, and their chaps came along, and one or two of us, particularly one of my friends who was ostensibly the cook. Her father was a captain in the Navy somewhere, I can't remember, and I was very, very fond of music, and the two of us used to do a lot of the singing to the band, and we had dances, and it was all great fun.
And what sort of everyday duties did you have? Did you have to look after your own vehicles, for example?
We had to do our own vehicles. When you came back, if the whole of the door, the whole of the floor was with blood, and other matters, all that had to be cleaned out and scrubbed. We all had to look after the vehicles.
So you're doing the mechanical side of things as well?
Oh, yes. But I was never a mechanic, so I don't think they ever let me do that. At least I probably had a jolly good reason why I couldn't do it.
So you were driving the ambulances?
Occasionally, and staff cars, yes.
Right.
So I didn't do as many as most because they seemed to think I was rather good in the office. So it was during that time that I very quickly was made a corporal.
Now, that was sort of the everyday duties that you were involved in, but then you were also involved in some particular events, and I'm thinking especially you were telling me about the Dunkirk evacuation.
Oh, yes, because, you see, we were just above the port of New Haven. So, of course, a lot of the casualties from Dunkirk via hospital ships and, of course, private conveyances like yachts, as you know, and rowing boats, anything that could be there at the time or that went over to collect those that were ill and sick or just hanging on for hope that somebody would rescue them. All these people, some of them never came back, of course. Some of the hospital ships sank. But those that did come back, they were, a lot of them were terribly ill, and their wounds were infected, and some of them had got what was the, I suppose you would say, shell shock. Two of them I had to take up to the mental hospital in Banstead in Surrey, I remember. And it was all very, very sad. And the whole of that went on for about 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks.
And were you actually treating people at the quayside as they came in, or just transporting them?
No, the doctors were there, and we would transport them to the local hospitals or to hospital trains. Or, as I said, two of them I took up to Banstead. Other people went all over the place to different environments. And they had to be, of course, checked in. And the whole of the port was just full of the WVS with coffee urns and giving them hot drinks and buns and giving them cheer and giving them hope, because so many of them were dying and so many of them were in such a terrible state, and there were so many relatives that could get there longing to see one of their dearest and nearest come out of that, off that ship. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. And it was a lot of sadness and grief, and there was a lot of hope, and there was a lot of cheer when people did meet up. But it was very, very, very distressing.
Was it a very sort of subdued atmosphere, can you remember? Or was it
very, oh yes, very subdued, very subdued. Very subdued. And of course I was down there once, or just going down there, when I heard on the telephone that it was one of the hospitals, we had heard that it had just been sunk with all aboard on its way over. But you see, so many of the small craft and the bigger craft, they were bombed from the air absolutely mercifully. I mean unmercifully. I only had one male cousin. He was a territorial, so he'd just become a second lieutenant when they sent him over to Dunkirk. And he was one of the ones that managed to escape. But he had to swim out a long way, and he hung on to something, a bit of wreckage or something. And then a little boat, I think it was a rowing boat, came by and hauled him in, and they got him safely back to England. But there was so much of that. So I was very, very lucky.
And then, of course, came the change over to the ATS.
That was just after we left South Highton, as far as I remember. And it was in July when one day we had our marching orders to leave South Highton and to go inland. We didn't quite know where, in Sussex. And my CO told us that it was a grave mission and that we had got to be out of South Highton early in the morning, and that meanwhile we would need two volunteers to guard the ambulance convoy. So I did the first 4 hours from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock, and then a very nice friend of mine, a New Zealand girl, she did the second shift till 6 o'clock. And then, of course, we moved off into Sussex.
Well, now, were you armed or anything for this guard duty? Or?
Yes. You were absolutely raw with laughter, because we didn't know why, but about a week before that, we were asked if we would like the RSM from the DCLI to give us some weapon training in case anything went wrong. So we all said yes, we would. Well, most of my colleagues seemed to have a pair of khaki trousers, but I didn't. And I remember trying to maneuver this huge, enormous rifle, which was really much taller than me to begin with, and trying to be very delicate in the maneuver with a skirt above my knees was extremely difficult and obviously very, very laughable.
And was it very heavy as well?
It was very heavy. And when my New Zealand friend, who was called Tiny, and I had these rifles, and I had mine on my shoulder, I remember going backwards and forwards in the courtyard with this thing banging behind me, bang, bang, and thinking that we didn't think it was an invasion, but we knew there was something afoot. And I did think that I was rather vulnerable because of the noise I was making. It was all right for Tiny, because she was tall and elegant, and she did hers with extreme finesse. Of course, with hindsight, why we were all so worried, or rather the high-ranking people, was the fact that we had been warned that Hitler was going to...
Oh, it was the threat of the invasion.
Yes, I want to alter that. He'd invade our south coast, and the operation was called Operation Sea Lion.